Pasa.
I'm ready to go.
You ready to go? Oops, what the hell happened there?
What happened where?
Oh, I was gonna
In
add Kyle to the meeting.
Kyle or Rob?
I was gonna add Kyle accidentally instead of Rob.
Oh, I see. Last time I was here, you tried to add Bill.
I think I tried to add everybody. I don't like
You
this
get.
new interface. Sometimes it adds people I don't want to add. Rob, are you there?
Must not have charged his headset.
Yeah, I'll have to try again.
I had to dust mine off.
Yeah, I've been on in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I come from the land down under.
Yeah, you were in Australia.
Yeah,
It
the.
took a long one with the Vegemite
Yeah.
sandwich and everything.
Especially considering the fact that I walked there and back, so it took a long time.
That's right. I took the Aborigine tour.
Walking on water is not as easy as Jesus made it look.
That's right. I wonder if he's rebooting or something. I have
He
no
has no sound.
sound.
Oh boy.
If I could walk on water. Well, that's if I could turn back time.
That's the next line, yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
Wow, you added yourself.
Added myself.
Yeah,
I
you
don't
just
have
showed
time.
back
I don't
up.
have time for you guys to try me again. I'm having enough problems. I don't know. It must be this new version of Skype or something. It had a little thing. It said join call. Cause, maybe because I was on there before, you invited me.
Yeah.
I had a drop off, so I was able to
But
rejoin
what
it.
if I didn't invite you? What if you just showed up?
I don't think that
How
that's. Who
rude.
knows? Yeah, that would be something, wouldn't it? Random people. Just joining whenever they want.
Yeah, you're on
Just open to the
Retrocast.
public. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God,
That's a
Chris,
pa a
hello.
Patreon tier.
Yeah, that's right. You get a special password.
Yeah, for $500 a month, you can join us on an episode.
That sounds
Yeah.
good. How are you guys doing?
We're just talking about his trip to Australia.
Oh, you went to Australia?
Yeah, I walked there.
Oh my God. You must have got soaked.
No, I figured out how to walk on water, but I was just saying it was difficult, though. It's not as easy as it looks.
Does it incorporate really, really big concave shoes? They're like little duck feet.
Yeah. Oh, I see where you're going for there. No, I haven't evolved. As a matter of fact, the version of me that I had been using degraded enough that it was time to use a new version, but I didn't have one ready, so I had to construct one from scratch.
You had to get some used parts.
Wow.
I'm
Yeah, I went to the.
afraid you can't ever get new parts in your body. Sorry. Not in our lifetime.
No. Oh, maybe.
Maybe mechanical parts,
Yeah.
but organic ones you probably won't get that
What
are
about
new.
like
We're
a pig's?
old.
What about a pig's heart? You can get a pig's heart.
You could.
Or whatever it is. I
Yeah, I don't like mud that much.
So, how was your trip for real? Was it great?
Yeah,
Good,
you were
yeah.
gambling in Vegas. You were in the city of sin. So tell us some of the
Yeah.
sins you created
Yeah.
over there.
Briefly, or there briefly, it was okay. It was interesting to see Las Vegas, but we were only there for a day. And I was kind of glad about that because it was just a bit over. It was a bit too much, really.
What did you do in the one day you were there?
A lot of walking.
Uh-huh.
We walked around the strip and walked through some of the different casinos and went up in the fake Eiffel Tower.
Did you have anyone slap cards at you on the street?
No, I had guys that had, there was guys that had snakes around their necks that wanted you to hold their snake.
Oh.
Okay. I didn't hold any guys' snakes. But,
you should.
When we were there, that was
should've taken
a while
pictures.
Ago. Like every street corner along the strip, there's just these guys that are like slapping these, like they're almost like trading card size things to get your attention, and they're trying to pass out cards for like whether it's escort services and stuff, like all of that type of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a lot of people handing out flyers and trying to get you to take flyers, and some of them were for prostitutes, but they weren't slapping cards or anything. Maybe they said that they couldn't do that anymore or something. They were just holding flyers and trying to get you to take flyers and stuff. But it was interesting. But
did you ride any rides? Like roller coasters?
Rides? No.
They have like roller coasters there.
Did you go on the monorail?
No, I saw it. I walked near it. Didn't go on it. We just went up in the Eiffel Tower, and I think there was only like attraction type thing.
You didn't go to Circus?
Didn't go to Circus, no. That was, I think, a little farther out.
It's a long walk.
It's on the other end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we went through Caesars and Bellagio, Flamingo.
Is Excalibur still there, or is that gone?
I didn't see that.
I think that's
the name
there.
Of the one we went.
It's next to the Luxor, I think.
Excalibur is like a huge castle. Like,
We didn't go. There's like we didn't go down the one street where the New York one is and stuff. We didn't go down that way.
That's where they have a roller coaster on New York, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike.
I rode the roller coasters. I just don't know what's there anymore because they reinvent themselves a lot. And
when we went,
man, it's
all the way down where Circus was, there was the Sahara was still there.
Yeah,
and
that's
we
gone,
went in,
right?
And you could tell that was like a, I mean, it looked and felt and smelled like a 50s style casino, and it was it must have been a year or two after that they demolished it.
That's where my parents used to gamble when they'd leave us at Circus when we were kids. And Circus is a pretty good place to leave your kids. I don't know how safe it was now, but back then, they leave us with $20 and $20, and then you get to watch the circus shows for free, and then you'd play video games, and then they'd have like a midway up there where they'd have the performers, so you could play like you could win stuffed animals and stuff. So it's like a fair.
Yeah.
We used to have a blast at Circus.
Yeah, some hotels were better than others, as far as filtering the smoke. I'm pretty sensitive to the smell of cigarettes and cigarette smoke and stuff, and I don't have much of a tolerance for it. And I would say Caesar's wasn't that good as far as it was pretty smoky in there. And
it's an older casino, though.
Yeah, but the Bellagio. I would say the best ones we walked through was probably the Bellagio as far as the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Bellagio was probably the least kitschy and, you know, gaudy.
You need
even
to
though it's still kind of.
You need to gamble here because it's smoke free.
Yeah, that's nice.
That is nice because my parents like to go to the casinos. They don't really gamble a lot. Like my dad will drop $60 at the tables, and my mom will play nickel machines or dime machines or whatever. But over there in New Mexico, it's smoke. It's awful. Like you leave and it's just like attached to your clothes.
Yeah.
It's the same here, Chris. I don't know if you've, ever, you know, gone up to the Seneca Niagara Casino, but because it's owned by American Indians, they don't have, like in New York State, you can't have smoking and stuff, but because it's a technically a reservation, it is smoky as anything in that casino. It's ridiculous. They have a no smoking section, but it's not really blocked off with anything. So
the no smoking sections suck, though. They like put all the games that nobody wants to play.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you have zero tables and we'll put all the games that are 10 years old in the no smoking section.
Yeah.
Because some of the slot machines are kind of fun. Like they have like these bonus rounds and stuff like that.
That's the only thing we did was entertaining.
You did some slots?
Yeah, video. Well, I mean, they're pretty much all video ones now, and it was kind of like seemed like a video game to me.
Yeah.
So we spent $5 and walked away with 20. That was the extent of our gambling. We won $15.
Did you watch a show in the evening or anything, or no?
No, I mean, it was the first day out west for us, so we were pretty exhausted by like 8 o'clock.
Sure.
It felt like it was 11.
They have fun shows there. It's worth it.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah, there were some that seemed sort of appealing, but like I said, I mean, the only reason we were there at all was that we like to fly Southwest Airlines, and they have a direct flight to Las Vegas. So since we were there, we decided to stay the night just to see it and, you know, to rest and stuff. And then early the next morning, we drove through the Mojave Desert to Joshua Tree National Park. Spent most of the afternoon there, which kind of reminded me of Garden of the Gods, Mike, in terms of just how it's laid out and how it's really big and you kind of drive from one section to another.
Right. Did you play some U2?
Yeah. Actually, what was funny was when we were almost there, one of the songs from that album came on the radio. One of those first three songs that were like big singles. But
yeah.
And then we went that night to Palm Springs, stay in Palm Springs for a couple nights, and then went to San Diego for a couple nights, and we flew back from San Diego. Direct so the main home? Point of the we had there are no direct flights from San Diego. We had to stop off in Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
Which is then just another like 45-minute flight from there.
Yeah.
But it was a good trip. We really liked Palm Springs and San Diego a lot.
I'd love to go out that way sometime.
Did you go to the harbor at all or no? Like where the convention center is?
Didn't really get too close. I think we were kind of near it.
Yeah.
Since we were only there for a little while, we stayed in, I think it's Pacific Beach area. I know it was like the abbreviation was PB because I kept saying, look, peanut butter. That's where we stayed. We stayed right on the water, basically, like right on the boardwalk of the beach.
Yeah.
And so that was really nice. And so we were in that neighborhood and we drove the one day to what I guess is a little Italy area. But there was definitely like neighborhoods we didn't get to see. But if we had been there longer, it was kind of like a sampler and a vacation in a way. Like neither of us had been out that way.
Yeah.
I mean, Kara's been on the West Coast before, but I haven't. So that was the first time. The farthest west I'd been prior to this was Phoenix. So it was a good time. It was hard to come back. We were kind of we came back to a really rainy week of gray skies, and I was kind of depressed. I'm just like, I want to go back.
Well, California's in a fire right now. It's a bit horrible.
Yeah, that's really bad. Northern.
You know what? It's their own damn fault. That's what I've heard.
That guy's an idiot. I swear.
I'm
not going to talk politics, I promise, but everything he speaks is just garbage coming out. I don't want to hear it. It's like, no, I don't want to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
So.
So what else?
How long were
That's
you
about
there?
it.
One whole, like, 5 days or
We were gone
a week, weren't you?
almost like Monday. We left early Monday morning, came back late Saturday night. So, most of the week. But,
Me
I
and
was
Barb
there.
need to go on a vacation like that, man. I just haven't been able to, like, get a group of days that make it worthwhile, if that makes any sense. Instead of doing, like, just a weekend, I'd like to
What
do a
made
week.
you, Chris, what made you plan that particular one out? Was there a reason that you chose those destinations, or you guys were just.
No, I mean, it started out just kind of as a general desire to go somewhere warm, and I think because I hadn't been to the West Coast before, so I don't know, it just kind of like worked out as a decent option versus other ones that we had talked about, but
That's cool. That's good.
yeah, so
Well, you
yeah,
miss some
San Diego's
fabulous
pretty
weather
sweet.
here.
Oh yeah,
But
that was
you got
beautiful.
to enjoy it when you got back, so that was good.
You can just tell, like, especially in San Diego, where it's just like the weather's nice almost year long. Like, people are just, it just seemed like people were friendlier and like
Yes.
happier, and
Yes.
the like customer service. And it's like, as soon as we landed in Baltimore, it was just like miserable East Coast people. And it's like, people up
Well,
here are just like so like tired of life.
you know how on Friday it was, you know, it started snowing, and like I work downtown, so it was snowing downtown. We all looked at it, and I turned to one of my friends and said, "It now begins the season of me constantly talking about wanting to move to New Mexico." I
Yeah.
just I hate this weather.
When I was younger, I used to kind of take pride in like East Coast and all that, but now I'm just totally like screw it. Like,
You're over it. You're old enough to be like,
yeah. Like, get me out of here.
I know.
You could move.
I know.
At least
Yeah, it's.
your job seems a little more like you can work remote.
Yeah, it's pretty flexible, but yeah, it may be in the cards in the future, and just kind of certain things with my wife's job kind of are the main factor in figuring out, and we talk about it. It's a possibility. Our families are mostly here. That would be the toughest thing, but
Yeah.
we'll see.
The
Maybe.
older you get, the tougher it'll be.
Yeah.
Because your parents are getting older.
Right.
True.
So, but
On that cheery note.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
well.
everyone dies eventually.
That's the
So I've
sad
heard.
part. Yeah.
Just tried to bring it down even more.
I know, right? That's what I tell people at work when they're having a really bad day. Like, oh my God, that sucks. I can't stand this. You know, this is a horrible day. I go, well, look on the bright side, and soon you'll be dead. You don't have to deal with it anymore. Then they just give me a dirty look.
All
That
you have to
sounds
do,
like.
all you have to do is turn on the news, and you'll find somebody else that's way worse shape than you
Oh,
are.
there's a
Like you,
huge matter of perspective.
I mean, you just got to put things in perspective. Like,
Yeah.
you see people losing their kids to cancer and, you know, stuff like that, and it's like, holy shit, my life's fantastic.
Yeah,
So, I
absolutely.
mean, yeah, it's
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I mean,
every time you're feeling down,
I have it good.
we got it good.
You're right, Mike. You're right. Before we get into stuff, can I just go through? I wanted to talk about and tell you guys the little bit of a Mike, you know more about it, but the buying spree that I was on the past month, because we really didn't.
Yeah, you're not. This is an explicit time podcast, so I'm gonna say you're not fucking around. You're
No, so
going for some big stuff.
I got some good comics recently, and I pulled the trigger on a few things, and we had a little bit of extra money that I was able to spend. So I'm like, you know what? Not this is this was unexpected. I'm not gonna go and buy or pay off like extra on the home equity or something like that, which is all responsible ways of handling that money. And I actually told my wife, I said, listen, we didn't expect this. I'm not doing it. We're doing fun things with this. I'm not paying down bill. Like we do well. Like, we pay off the credit card every month. So it's not like we've got a huge debt, but obviously we could have, put it towards other things. I'm like, no, I'm doing fun things. So I bought a few comics recently, and the first one I bought was a pretty nice copy, like a very fine copy of Batman 232, and I think we covered that maybe a month ago or so. That sounds right? The first Ra's al Ghul. So that was my first one to dip in my toe in, but the big ones that I got were at Comic Link, and I bought a nice high grade copy of Spider-Man 42, which is the one where Mary Jane Watson's face first appears.
Oh,
So
nice.
I've been wanting
I
that one
didn't
for
know
a
about
while.
this one.
I really like I liked the whole progression in reading those old Spider-Man, how like the first time her name's mentioned is like Spidey 15, and they literally don't show her face until 42. So this was like almost like an ongoing, like inside joke where like Aunt May kept on trying to set him up over and over again, and he kept on getting out of it. And finally, he couldn't get out of it anymore. Literally, like over 2 years later in real time, as you're reading these comic books, and so then she appears on that last page where she says, "Face it, Tiger, you just hit the jackpot." So I got that one. That was a real nice. That was a nice one that I've been wanting for a while. And the other one that I got at the same time was a nice mid-grade copy of Avengers number 4, which was obviously the first Silver Age Captain America. So that was probably the last of the comics that I really, really would want that would be somewhat obtainable after getting like that X-Men number one and the Amazing Spider-Man 14. This was like the third of those, so I'm pretty happy about that. And then I was telling you guys just what was it last week? I went ahead and got a nice low grade copy of Flash 123, which is the first Silver Age of Jay Garrick. And I'm looking at it now, and it looks really, really nice. The reason why it's graded as it is and was priced very reasonably is that it has somebody wrote their name in like marker on the first page. It doesn't detract from the artwork. It's above the actual artwork, but it's a nice big bold letters on the first page. But
Does
I
it
mean,
say
it checks
Michael
up.
Myers?
Yes, it is a matter of fact. I wanted to tell you. No, I can't even remember what I said. It was obviously somebody learning their letters. So it was, it was a decent price, and the how the cover actually looks and stuff, it looks pretty nice. It's downgraded because of the first page, but the cover is tightly attached, and the centerfold's attached very nicely, and it's a pretty good copy. I'm very happy about it. But yeah, so I went on a little tear there. I think I'm pretty much done. I've got to take a break from that. Because that mic is, I'm sure you know, that gets very addicting.
Yeah, I was on a tear and I kept buying and buying and I started to take a break.
Yeah, you got to sometimes. And I
I just need
decided,
to
like,
'cause it was just like I was getting too much.
yeah, and I start looking for things, like stuff that I never would have even thought, like, oh, I should, all of a sudden I see something, I'm like, oh, I should get that one. I
Yeah,
should get
once I
that
went down the
one.
Comic Link thing, man,
It's like.
I'm glad I got out of it because I was like I was on it for a while.
Yeah, it's It's very, when you're interested in this type of, it's because there's always more that you can find.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to step away from it sometimes. But yeah,
I bought a little chair. I bought a lot of Amazing Spider-Man recently.
I got to fill that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that podcast. You mentioned it, I think, on your last podcast or something, but I haven't gotten to that one yet.
Yeah, I got quite a few.
That's cool.
It's a stack. So that was fine. Probably about 50, or maybe 40.
Were you getting like to continue that run in the mid 200s?
It's in the 200s. It's a lot of it's the Len Wein and the Len Wein era.
Yep.
Matter of fact, a lot of them circle around. You posted recently the first appearance of Rocket Racer.
Yeah.
It's around that era.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think the earliest was 117.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the biggest key that was out of it was 149, which was the first appearance of Ben Reilly. Yeah.
Oh, Ben Reilly, yep.
Yeah, which is kind of a big deal for me because I'm a fan of the Clone Saga. So.
Yeah, I've been reading. I'm continuing my reading in Spider-Man. You know, going through with those digital masterworks and into the 170s now. And once I hit, after I hit 200, I'll be able to say I've actually read every single issue of the original run of Amazing Spider-Man because I've read 200 and up, and now I'm just finishing the gap.
Yeah, I get into these things too, like where I read some digital comics and it makes me buy them because I enjoy them, and I don't feel like when I read it digitally that I own it. I don't psychologically.
Well, you don't.
I don't know. It just like it's a weird detached feeling for me, and I know these are like disorders. I really should see a psychiatrist about.
I mean, honestly, unless you have like your own, I mean, even so, like you need software, obviously, to read any of this stuff. And if for whatever reason some of that software goes away, you're not going to be able to read these books. You don't really own them. You're basically leasing them.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's not the right word because you're not paying constantly.
I do feel like I get my money's worth on the lease. Like I've even been tracking like how much I'm reading digitally just to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting my money's worth on Marvel Unlimited and definitely DC, what do you call it, Universe. Because I am reading comics off of there. Plus I'm watching Titans every Friday or every week.
Now that you guys have... or that you've had DC Universe for a little while, like what's the because I know on a past episode we were speculating on what the comic collection was going to be like on there. I haven't seen too many impressions or looked into it that much. What do you guys think of it so far?
The comic
side, I don't have it.
The comic side is not very good because if you get spoiled by Marvel Unlimited, it just grows and grows and grows and grows, and the library keeps growing. This one kind of stays stagnant. In other words, sometimes you'll get a note that, hey, this is the last week you can read Teen Titans Spotlight. Or, you know, it's not even a good notification. I'd rather like get an email that says, hey, these books are leaving. These are coming. I don't think they have a good way of showing that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as far as like finding stuff to read, there's plenty. Like if you want to spend $6.99 and read DC Comics, you could find plenty of like Batman arcs or Superman stuff that you'll enjoy. It's just not always there. That's the problem. You have to, once it shows up, I would suggest if you want to read that arc, you read the arc because you don't know if it's going to go away because it's like Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Except Netflix seems to have things a little longer.
Yeah,
I was surprised that I was listening to another podcast and I can't remember what it was, but they mentioned that, you know, I mean, the service was about a month old and they were already changing things out. Like stuff that was originally available was already off.
Yeah, I've already seen that happen. Cause there was, I was gonna go read Teen Titans Spotlight, and I noticed it was only gonna be there one more week. It's just a 4-issue miniseries, but, by the time I got to it, it was already gone.
That one where they did an issue about each one of the newer characters.
Yeah, and Cyborg, Starfire. It was just the 4-issue Cyborg, Starfire, Raven, and who was the other one? Jericho, I think, maybe.
It was Changeling, who wasn't a new
Changeling,
character.
Or Changeling, yeah. It was just
it was lesser known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's something that, for myself, I think that it's something that I'm going to be interested in, but I think, Mike, I was telling you before that at this point, I'm going to wait for a lot more video content to be on there, because I don't have as much interest in watching some of the older stuff, and just having one new show once a week just wouldn't be enough to justify it for me. So I'll wait for the Titans to complete, for Swamp Thing to get going, even probably like wait farther out until Star Girl starts up, and then I'll probably I'll join.
Is Doom Patrol the next one?
Oh, they already showed up. Well, I mean, they already came out.
I mean, their own.
Titans. Yeah, they're
their own show though.
I thought Swamp Thing was the next one, and then Doom
Thing
Patrol.
Okay.
But maybe not, because
yeah, I'm not sure.
The Doom Patrol episode was pretty damn impressive. I mean, it was damn good. I love the original Doom Patrol, so it was, I thought it was like creepy and spot on, and it made it very, it definitely distinguished why they're the unusual group of the DC Universe.
That's good.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of essential for the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, Niles, yeah. I think they nailed Niles, because I don't know, he's always had this like creepiness about him, like, is mm-hmm. he just, or is he leading these people for his own, you know, motives? And I don't know, he's had, that's the way they portray him in this show, and it's pretty freaky. But because of what he's done with them, they realize that he's their savior. Like, he saved Cliff. You know, he's just a brain, but he saved him. And he saved mm-hmm. Larry, and he saved Rita. And he saved Changeling. So that's how Changeling becomes in the Titans, as they introduce the Doom Patrol. But, I enjoy the crap out of it. And they just threw in Jason Todd in this last episode. I'm like, all right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for me, just watching an hour of shows every week, that's worth my $6 of entertainment. Because I would pay $6 to go see it at a theater.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's. But I also start reading stuff that I want to revisit. Like, I just read Hawk and Dove again and a couple other things. And they have some obscure shit on there. Like the Forbidden, what is it called? Forbidden Mansion of what? I can't remember. It's that Mansion of
Forbidden
Love.
Love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing I guess I don't understand is I'm not, like, obviously they have this stuff digitally. I don't know why, like, what's the rationale for them to change things out rather than build it up for the reading, the material.
It's got to be a money thing. It's got to be like, hey, we're still making X amount on Comixology. If we mm-hmm. do this, maybe we won't. I don't know. Because you probably have these meetings with shareholders saying, it's all about money. You know that.
Sure.
You start putting pie charts together, and you say, well, maybe we'll do this. And we'll see how it goes, because we'll have X amount of subscribers.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. But I mean, it's something that, like, if it would have been a building library like Marvel Unlimited, it's something that I probably would have joined right away for.
Well, yeah, a couple of people probably would have, just for the comics.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I think I agree with what Mike said, and I think that if Marvel hadn't already built up Marvel Unlimited the way that it was, because they were kind of so early in the game with that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was more like what DC Universe is,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's just like it would be so. They would piss off so many people if they dropped it and changed it at this point, you know.
Yeah.
I suspect that that's why they just kind of stick with it, and why when DC looked at like, well, what's the best way for us to approach this, they chose to go a different route. But it looks like you can browse. I wasn't sure, but it looks like you can browse what comics are available without having, you know, the access to be able to read them. And there is a lot of stuff there, like Mike said.
They have, and you can search under it, and they have a comic section, they have a TV section, and a movie section. You can start browsing. Like, the Swamp Thing stuff is starting to show up, whereas before they had nothing. So, like, that's one thing that they're starting to build. So you can see things they're trying to build around. Like, Doom Patrol's getting bigger now, too. It started mm-hmm. off with only, like, 2 Grant Morrison issues, and now they're up to 6 or something like that. So mm-hmm. they're building it by the week, and probably by whatever's on DC Universe. Or, like, activities like Batman Month, or if something's mm-hmm. happening, they do that.
Yeah,
they
you
also
can see
sell
that with...
shirts and stuff like that, too. So they have a shop and a store and stuff like that. I wish they would still have, like, digital codes, though, like the Marvel does, where you can enter them in. And I don't like the randomness of digital codes now. They pick and choose what they want, and it's few and far between. It almost makes it not worth it, like not worth putting in the digital code.
So what they have a shop, you said. What kind of things are they?
Shirts,
are they selling?
Models, toys, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
Like it's a way. It's another way you can get. Like let's say if you missed out on the Teen Titans ordering from previews. You know the statues they came out with, the Marv Wolfman and Perez statues.
Yeah.
From the cover of the first issue. Mm-hmm. You know how you can combine the statues and it forms the sort of the cover with all the figures?
Yeah.
Like they sell stuff like that on there. So you can like get statues and stuff.
Oh, okay.
You can also win. They have like a contest every week. I don't normally enter it, but you can win stuff. I'm sure like finding stuff to do if you have the time. That's the real problem with anything, is do you really have time to do X, and what if you do have time to, what does it take away the time from? Because time is very limited. We all work various hours a week, and then you have activities that you have to do, like go shopping every week, you have to do certain things. And then you have some free time. And that free time is, I don't know, it's how you want to spend it. Especially like you have Shudder and stuff like that. So you got to say, oh, am I going to watch some horror movies this week or what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say if you were into old DC TV and like animation and stuff, that it has a lot of value. Like looking at, you know, like all the old DC TV shows and animated TV shows and animated movies and stuff like that. There's definitely a lot to watch on the app, on the service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're into that.
There's some decent documentaries, too. I started watching one on Superman I hadn't seen before. It was really good.
Yeah, that stuff sounds interesting to me, for sure.
But...
And I encourage everybody to try it, because you could get a free 30-day trial. It hurts nothing, like, to do a 30-day trial and then cancel it.
Yeah.
I mean, yep. the only thing that you might want to prevent is wait until Titans is out so you can binge watch it in 30 days, you know, so.
Exactly, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, if there's going to be a 30, if it's a 30-day trial, not just a week trial, then yeah, I mean, I probably will go ahead and sign up once Titans is over, so I have a chance to watch the whole
I'd be curious how you think of Titans, Chris, because it's very this is very much like an else what you know an Elseworlds type Titans.
thing.
It's not like the core. They take aspects of the character and then do something different with it for all of them. I would say the closest to the comics is probably Changeling. Raven, sort of, but they made Raven like really satanic. Like it is. They introduced this family, and I don't think I've ever seen them in comics before. They just call them mom, dad, sis, and brother or something like that. And they like work for this organization that's trying to capture Raven, and they like inject something into like they have these shots and they inject them and it gives them superpowers, and it's like a crazy family. It's almost creepy because they have like a 1950s vibe, like a Leave It to Beaver family vibe, but they're killers. It's insane. And yeah, it's really creepy. If you ever like watch, I think one there was a Kathleen Turner movie called Stepmom or something like that, where
Yeah, I think so.
she's actually a killer. She has like that 1950s sensibility, and but behind the scenes she's murdering people. That's the way this whole family is. And I don't know if they exist in comics at all. I never really researched, but they're pretty creepy. But I'd be real curious to see how what you thought because it is so different. Like Daryl hates it. I absolutely love it. And there's a lot of people.
I've seen that he doesn't like it, but have you talked to him at all about why he doesn't like it?
No, I mean he says it's too violent, but we're talking about a guy that likes the like darkest shit ever. Like so he doesn't want his Starfire to kill people. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, it could be not
He
like an
doesn't like he,
objection.
he doesn't like the Dick Grayson Robin because it's more like a Jason Todd.
I mean, I'm okay with things being different. It's just whether it's done well or not, you know? I mean, the preview did not seem like it was done well to me.
Yeah, that could be it. I mean, it would be interesting to watch it as a whole. I think you need to watch at least two episodes, though. If you do try a 30-day trial, don't give up on the first. Just
Yeah, almost.
stay the course a little bit.
Yeah. Enough to give it
Enough,
a shot,
yeah,
but
enough to understand what they're doing, the tone.
yeah, I mean, I'm okay with dark and different interpretations of stuff. It's just whether I feel like they're doing it well or not. And I mean, but I kind of do feel like at some point giving it a shot just because I shit on the preview so much. Like, you know, it's like it's only I feel like it's only fair for me to like actually give it a shot, you know.
I know, like, from the Nerdy Legion perspective, I know Martin likes it, and I know Ronnie and Aaron like it a lot. And even people, do you know Savage Chuck at all? The guy, he used to be a DC Noise fan. He's on Facebook. He's very much an anti-DC on TV. I mean, not TV, but movies. Like not liking the new movies. And like when Doom Patrol came out, he was blown away. Like this guy is a guy that's totally Silver Age proponent of Doom Patrol. And he said so far he's loved the show. So I mean, you could get other extremes. And this is a guy that sort of hates modern comics. Like he's not a fan of modern comics, but anything that's like Bronze Age or prior, he absolutely adores. So, I mean, I've seen other extremes. So, yeah. Worth a shot.
Yeah, for sure.
I love
Absolutely.
it.
And
Plus
you're getting your money's worth, so
the
that's, I mean, that's
soundtracks
great.
are like the music they choose and stuff is like awesome as hell. I
For the
dig it.
show, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's like my type of music, and it varies. It varies from like current alternative to 1950s and 40s stuff. So it's like all the stuff that I like, it's just hitting with me.
Well, I definitely like the fact that they're willing to put like and highlight some of like these obscure characters that like, well, I mean they're obscure to the average person, like Hawk and Dove and the Doom Patrol and stuff. I mean, unless you've been reading comic books, you don't know who any of these things are. And the fact that they're willing to, actually have characters of them on TV is super cool.
Yeah, I think they got Hawk and Dove spot on. Maybe not in terms of like Lords of Order, Lords of Chaos, but in terms of personality. Like, you know how Hawk is. Hawk is like, think last and go forward and kick ass. And Dove's the opposite. She's more patient and understanding and represents hope. And so, yeah, I dig it.
That's good.
Plus, their costumes were spot on for those two, especially. Holy mackerel. All right, let's dig into some comics. Or
All right, let's do
some
that.
whatever, retro, whatever.
Let's do it.
Let's do a first one, and then we have a question, so we'll dig into a question.
Okay. All right. Chris, do you want to start? You were off last week.
Yeah, I can. Well,
Okay.
last couple months, I think, actually. It's been a while. Oh, I see what you mean. I've been off from the podcast for a while.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, let me find my spot here. So this is one I read digitally. All the comics that I read came out on the same day,
Oh.
probably, or roughly, at least according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics.
Nice job, Mike.
You're welcome.
I've seen Mike's Amazing World of Comics. It's in his basement.
You should actually have a theme park, Mike.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get like what is it in big or I don't know, but you can get like one of those little like train sets that you can actually sit on. They
Oh,
take you like on
yes!
a
Take them
ride around
around.
your take you on
Yes.
a little ride or pick you up by the stairs and takes you on a little ride around the long boxes.
I wish it was that big. I could put a train set around it.
So I read Suicide Squad number 2. So the second issue of the 87 series. So it's Jon Ostrander, Luke McDonnell, Carl Kessel. And it picks up with this the first squad going out on their first mission. Because the first issue is kind of like showed the group that they're going after in action and showed the team being put together and stuff. So you got Mindboggler, Enchantress, Bronze Tiger, Plastique, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, and Rick Flag are waiting for their rendezvous outside of the building that the Jihad, the group that they're going after, is located in, and it turns out to be Nightshade, who has infiltrated the Jihad as is acting as a member of the group named Kimura. Or I don't know if you say that Chimera or Kimura, if it's a hard sound, but Kimura, I think it is.
We'll go with
So,
that.
yeah, so she's their woman on the inside, undercover for Task Force X, and she is emotionally distressed because of the whole experience of being undercover. She wants to quit, slaps Rick Flag across the face as soon as she sees him, and the whole like what she's had to do as a member of Jihad, but also the just emotional toil of being a double agent kind of thing, of having to, you know, become friends with people in this other organization and then betray them, even though, like, she's also upset by the things that they've done as a part of it. She's, you know, makes a point to talk about the fact that Jihad's last demonstration was used real ammo on real people. And so now she's an accessory to a massacre. So it sounds like they were supposed to get there sooner, but they were tied up by the stuff that happened in the Legends miniseries. So after that little disagreement kind of thing goes on, Flag gives out orders, and he pretty much has each member going up and taking out a different member of the Jihad, for the most part. And they use Nightshade to, in her powers, to kind of create these portals to deposit the various members throughout the facility and get them in position to attack. He also mentions that Nightshade has a partner in the organization that's going to take care of the building's generators. And it's kind of like a foreshadowing there. So she starts doing that, starts putting everybody in position, which takes a couple pages. Flag is going to take out the leader if he can, who is pretty cautious, pretty secretive, always patrols at different times, always takes different routes, but they have a plan to get to him. But pretty much on her first opportunity, Plastique tries to cross over to Jihad. She says that she encounters this guy, Comrade Mushtaq. They're in that fictional DC Middle Eastern country of Karak. Sees a lot of attention in this time period because there's like the early issues of Justice League at this time also dealing with Karak. It's obvious what it's a stand in for. It's not, yeah. Not being very like. Plastique tries to switch sides, and unfortunately for her, she finds out that Colonel Mushtaq is died 3 months ago, and he's being impersonated by Nemesis, who is Nightshade's contact, the one that was mentioned earlier. So we've already got one member of the group trying to go rogue, while the other members start to go into action against their targets. Mindboggler uses powers on a group of members, and Bronze Tiger goes up against a guy that is kind of his match in terms of martial art ability and that kind of thing. Deadshot's going after Manticore. And I think that's where he gets his name from. This is his favorite character right here.
Yeah.
In this elevator shaft, it was kind of a cool sequence where Deadshot tries to drop an elevator on the guy, but he's powerful enough that he can tear up through both the bottom and the top of the elevator before it, you know, impacts on him and stuff. All the different battles are going on, and things are starting to escalate. I'd say probably one of my favorite sequences was Captain Boomerang gets sent. I mean, he's a riot and to begin with. And he gets sent up against a guy who has speed powers, of course. And this battle is more of like for comic relief in a way, because the guy dodges the boomerangs, but doesn't account for them coming back, you know? So they hit him in the back and knock him out on the ledge of this. He's like this outdoor kind of guy. He's sleeping in this crevice in the mountainside that the complex is built into. So he kicks him out. Boomerang kicks him off the edge, and as he's falling, he says, he mentions, hey, maybe, you know, you can do the same thing Flashy does with your super speed, you know, like create up whirlwinds and, you know, spiral up drafts kind of thing like that. And then the next panel is just the word splat.
Oh, God.
So he's like, I guess you weren't, guess you just weren't in old Flashy's class, mate. Just as hell weren't in mine. Sure as hell weren't in mine. But the other, I say, like, kind of top moment in the issue is in the first issue, Mindboggler insulted Captain Boomerang. And as towards the end of the issue, he comes out onto this platform above this room, and he sees Mindboggler, and she doesn't realize that this guy's coming up behind her with a weapon. He's just about to warn her, and then he thinks, wait a second, she made a laughingstock in front of me and in front of the others, and so he doesn't say anything, and she gets shot and killed. So, you know, when he comes back to the group, he just says she's dead, and that he got there just in time to see her get shot. And it Nemesis there doesn't seem like he completely believes him, but they need to make their escape from the complex. It's their mission completed and stuff. So I thought it was a really solid issue. You know, I mean, these early issues are definitely a classic.
I whole thing is just amazing. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
that first run that Ostrander does is just, the thing I love about it too is it really made two characters that I don't think people really considered, like, it just fleshed them out, and that's Captain Boomerang and Deadshot. Like, it. Mm-hmm. It really fleshed them out, so they're like a big part in my eyes of the DC universe. Because Captain Boomerang, yeah, he's awesome and he's a cool rogue, but this one really fleshes out like who he is and what his motivations are all the time. They're not just like to rob a bank with a boomerang.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a joke before this. Yeah, I haven't found myself liking more modern versions of the Suicide Squad, but...
Well, this was a long run. This was a very long run.
Yeah, but I like this a lot, and I mean, I like Ostrander's writing. Mm-hmm. The artwork is really good, too, really solid by McDonald, but yeah, I think it does a good job of hitting home right away. Like, this is not a superhero team, you know. They have one member tries to flip sides and another one gets killed, and even though it's, you know, it's Mindboggler who gets killed, that's not like, if one was going to get killed, you probably could guess that it was going to be her. Like, it's made, it's not just a throwaway death, because it has like ramifications for Captain Boomerang's character, you know. That's mm-hmm. kind of the more important things, is that it was a death that could be prevented. And when you have people like Captain Boomerang on your team, like, even though you can control them somewhat by putting an implant in them or something like that, they still will have opportunities to,
you know, not everybody has an implant. Like,
no.
Like Nightshade, I don't believe she has one, and Ric Flag obviously doesn't have one. Ric Flag, like, is the only legacy Suicide Squad character there is, because they were in the Silver Age. He's right. Got that legacy going back there.
Right. Bronze Tiger.
Bronze Tiger doesn't have one either. Yep.
Nemesis. I think Katana comes in as a replacement for Mindboggler after this, I think, but. But yeah, it was good. Good stuff.
Yeah, I bought some of these issues when they first came out, and I mean, I don't know if I just couldn't appreciate it at the time, but I only bought like the first, like maybe the first 17 issues. I dropped it, and then I started buying them in trade about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And man, these are good. I don't know why, what I didn't enjoy about it when they were coming out month to month, or maybe I was just buying too many titles and
had
due to circumstances,
back.
I had to cut back. Yeah.
And you're like, I need these 12 X-Men titles. I can't have
exactly.
Suicide
exactly. So I dropped it, but I mean, I'm telling you, man, I just recently read this volume when I started in on it, probably in the last year. And so I've read the first three or four, trades, and man, I mean, this is really, really good.
If you stick with it, you're gonna run across that one guy, that racist. There's like white supremacist group, and
oh well, I'm buying each time that they have a trade, a new trade come out.
Really early, like I'm talking to Chris. Like if he keeps reading, like I think it's seven or eight.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting story.
Well, like I say, I lost my thought. I'll let you know when I think of it. Getting old.
Oh, yeah.
The white spots. They suck.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, blank. There's a blank in my brain. White spot.
Yeah. Yep.
I guess I didn't realize that Legion of Collectors edition was a reprint of number one.
Well, I know, I saw that too.
I guess I didn't.
I would have assumed it was the whatever Suicide Squad series was coming out at the time.
Oh, I was going to say, in relation to what you said, Rob, they maybe it was just a matter of your age and taste at the time, you know. I mean, I don't think, I mean, right. I was young when this came out, but I don't think I would have appreciated that much at the time, just because nowadays I like lesser known characters and stuff and more obscure characters, but that's not really what I was into at the time. So I don't know. And I don't know if I would have appreciated the things about it that I appreciate now,
since I was a kid, I always been drawn to characters that, like, I would just latch on. Oh, this is somebody different. And I'm still that way. Like, I love to go down the rabbit hole of new characters and just learn about them. So like this team, like, really, really was different to me, because I was like, hey, you don't get too many comics where villains are spotlighted right. In a way where they could be saving the world. So not willingly, but to reduce their sentences and not get their heads blown off. Mm-hmm. So, I've always loved this stuff. Like even what was that series called? Supervillains team up or something like that.
Marvel side?
And well, that's the Marvel. That's the Doctor Doom and Namor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of the other one.
Secret Society
of Supervillains. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was such a cool title, because It was about villains, but you had one guy focused as the hero, and that was Captain Comet. I was like, it's such a weird title. I loved it. I love shit like that. Yeah, this is one of my favorite titles of all time.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, I really got to appreciate Suicide Squad recently. Yeah, good, definitely a good one.
Cool. Who's next?
Mike, you want to go? Or you want me to go?
I'll go.
Okay, go ahead.
So, it's Veterans Day tomorrow, so I thought I would focus on military comics, and I'm glad I did because I had a couple 5 out of 5s. But I'll start with the bottom and work my way up. So, and I'm not gonna go panel by panel, but I'm just gonna kind of give highlights. So I read Sergeant Fury and His Howling Commandos #1. I don't own this one. I read it on Marvel Unlimited. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and at this point, I guess like early Silver Age Jack Kirby, I'm not crazy about. But once you hit like 70s Kirby, I'm more on board, because his style really changed. Like, I think you can go into the 50s and see it different, and then you can go into the 60s and see it different, like early FF, and then once the 70s sort of hit, it's very, even in Fantastic Four, you start seeing like a different style of his art. But the first issue of Sergeant Fury and His Howling Commandos sort of lackluster. I didn't like it a lot. I thought it was good, but it wasn't great. It kind of introduces his team, which is somewhat forgettable. The only one that's rememberable is Dum Dum Dugan, and he's probably the one guy that everybody could say, "Oh yeah, Howling Commandos, Dum Dum Dugan." I think they have Frenchie too, or what's his? I think his name is Frenchie, but he's not in it yet. These guys I don't even recognize. They have one guy that's like a new kid that's kind of brand new. They have an actor who was in Hollywood, and he kind of plays like the unknown soldier role. Like, he can act like he's a Nazi and speak German. He's sort of interesting. But Sergeant Fury is like a hard-nosed guy. Like, he's really hard on his team. Like, even in training seems like crazy. Like, Dum Dum sitting there with what looks like a real automatic weapon. And you know how you crawl? They have those drills where they're like crawling in the mud, you know, and they don't want to get hit. So you're like real low to the mud. Well, he's like shooting this automatic weapon right over their heads. Stay down. Shooting right over their heads in their training session. He could have probably killed them. But it was an okay story. They just go on a mission in Germany, and they kind of introduces the team. But then I got into Savage Combat Tales #1 from Atlas Comics. And this was, it was only 3 issues long. And this one was really good. This one, it was good because it's so different. Like, I was like, okay, this guy's going to be a badass. He's going to be like Sergeant Rock, Sergeant Stryker. And he wasn't a badass. This guy did not want to kill anybody. He didn't even know how to shoot his, like, he didn't even want to shoot his gun, because he was raised by a family very much like that true story that they just had a movie about, where the guy's a medic. What was it called? Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's very much like that, except he's not a medic. He's on the ground with his team. And like, his team is like, and he's like the best sharpshooter there, but he won't fire his gun. So it's such a weird story. Is like, he's with his team and they get bombed. They're in Africa in World War II. And I don't know much about historically, I don't know much about what was going on in Africa in World War II. But they were in there. Most of the stuff I know that happened in World War II was European. I would like to know more about what was happening in Africa. But They had like four soldiers that were gonna be tried because they, what do they call it when a soldier court-martial had a brain fart. I couldn't think about it. Four soldiers that were gonna be court-martialed for various reasons, and they were underneath like a building, and the building collapsed. And then Sergeant Stryker kind of lost all of his team, kind of because he wouldn't fire a gun. And then it shows a flashback, like his love interest, and she was like, "You gotta bring back my brother, and you both need to come back." And because he didn't fire his gun, he lost his girlfriend's brother, so he's like has no redemption. But he does manage to get back to the building that collapsed and rescue all of these members that are going to be court-martialed, and they also don't want to fire, like kill. No, they do kill. Sorry, they do get guns and they do kill. That's his death squad. But he does rescue them, and all these guys that are going to be court-martialed or tried become like his unit, and that's kind of how it ends. And I liked it because it was so different. Like, it's such an unusual story, and I don't even know if he. Oh, he did kill a guy at the very end. He finally murdered a guy at the very, very end. One of his men was going to get killed, and he shot him. And he said, "Oh, I've committed the first murder. I betrayed my father," because his father said to never take a life. The next story is called Bounty. This one's really cool, and it makes you want to do research, like some of these things. Like, it sounds like Japan and China in World War II weren't the best of friends, and they used to hire, like, China used to hire soldiers to shoot down Japanese Zeros, and if they could tell them where the plane was and confirm it, the pilot would get money for it. This sounds absolutely fascinating to me. But anyway, it's about this pilot that's a pretty badass pilot that seems like his whole motivation is money driven. Like, it has nothing to do with whose side he's on or anything. But he would shoot down these Zeros, and then he'd risk his own men to make sure he would spot where the Zero went down, so he could send to the Chinese, "Okay, here's where the Zero landed," and he can go get his money. And he would lose other pilots because of this. And the irony of this is like a Tales from the Crypt type story. The irony of the story is he gets shot down, and then his plane crashes in China, so he thinks he's okay because he's shooting down Zeros. And he gets out of his plane and he goes, "I'm American. I have the badge." He has the thing on his jacket sewn on that he actually shoots down. I guess it's a symbol of the Chinese symbol. And he's like, "I'm with you guys, and I just shot down some Japanese pilots," and they ended up shooting him, and they were like Chinese guys that were getting paid to kill people for the Japanese. So that was the irony of the situation. It was a really interesting story. Both of them were unique. So that's only three issues. Made me kind of want to read the next one, especially because of this odd group of characters of Sergeant Stryker, who doesn't want to kill anybody, and four guys that are court-martialed fighting in the war. So
Oh.
those are my two books.
You covered them both at the same time.
Yeah. Well,
Lucky you.
I have more, but I'm saving the
Oh,
best for
okay.
last.
Oh, okay. All right, so I'll cover my first one, and then Mike, like you said, after that, if you want to do the questions.
Yeah.
All right, so the first one I'm gonna talk about today is ROM Space Knight number three.
Nice.
So, yeah, Bill Mantlo is the writer, and Seo Buscema is the artist, and this is right at the beginning of the run, obviously, and the United States government firmly believes that ROM is some sort of crazy alien actually killing, going around and disintegrating American citizens because they don't know anything about the dire wraiths. This was both of the books that I read this time around were very dense. There was a lot of explanation, a lot of background, and I would say that just these two comics took me almost an hour to read this morning, just because how involved they were. But basically, the gist of this one is that the U.S. government, and I'm not quite sure why they've picked this guy. This is not explained, but...
So you're reading this in singles?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a full run of Vellum?
No, I don't. Mm. I've got a couple of the early issues, and then I've got scattered throughout the run, but I don't have nearly a full run at all. But I'm not sure why... militaries with S.H.I.E.L.D., and they've brought in a criminal who has killed people. He's actually like a thief. He's like a bank robber. But he has killed people on occasion when it was necessary and for him to escape. But they brought him there. He has a hatred of Rom, and he actually was there in the prior issue and saw him destroy a police car and killed the police chief inside, who of course was a dire wraith. But while I'm sure there's a lot of people that maybe against Rom at this particular occasion, including this general and this S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and so forth, not quite 100% sure why they've decided to bring in an actual convict into this, but they have. And they've decided that because he's on the same page as them, they would like him to go up against Rom, and they've got a plan. So they briefly go through Rom's origin, and I'm not sure if they did that in issue one or two, but just how he was grafted. He was actually, you know, flesh and blood, and was grafted into like a suit of armor and is now like a cyborg. But the main gist of this is that Rom ends up discovering a dire wraith headquarters in which they are trying to build a large antenna ray to retrieve back any wraiths that have been banished into limbo, which is what Rom actually does when he... it looks like he's disintegrating them. They're not really dead. They go to limbo. And it leaves like a bunch of ash on the ground. It makes it look like they've been disintegrated. So he gets there. All of these dire wraiths are still in human form. They don't have any of their sorcery or their actual dire wraith weapons. So they're making do with what they have there. And honestly, through the course of the issue, as he's fighting, he really does make very short work of these dire wraiths, and he destroys the antenna to keep them from recalling their buddies from limbo. And so the only other thing of note in this particular issue is, again, this convict, whose name is Archie Stryker, and you see... him go through this process where they show this suit of armor that they want to kind of now graft him into. And they go ahead, and by the end of the issue, they've done this. And from what's explained is that this was another space knight. It's not clear how they got this armor or how they removed the organic material out of the armor, but Rom is hit by flames from Archie Stryker's suit, and he realizes what it is. It's actually a living fire from this particular famous space knight. And he looks around and he sees that this Archie Stryker is in the suit, and he gets very upset because he knows that the space knight that had been inhabiting the armor must have been murdered in order for somebody else to be in it. And that's how the issue ends, is that he realizes that it's not his old friend in the armor, but it's this human.
And he's calling himself Firefall now, and it sets up for the following issue that they're going to have an epic battle. I just had this this particular issue just kind of lying around. I had read one and two quite a long time ago. I have issues one and three, and then my next issue is not until number six. So I just decided to pick it up and give it a read. It was okay for what it was, but I really didn't have much recall from the first two issues, and kind of threw me in the mix of it. And like I said, I mean, it was really, really a very long read because it had a lot of explanation going on. So it was okay for what it was, but it certainly isn't my favorite ROM issue that I've read. I have more of a complete run farther on with starting with like issues 30 up and stuff. I've got a good 15, 16 issues in a row, and then a break, and then a bunch more. And that's kind of where I was first exposed to ROM, was a little bit later on, when he was when it was in the issues were in the 30s, and I pick up some on the
because in the ties to the X-Men, because later on,
you know what,
he was in the X-Men.
I don't actually think so. I think I just ended up seeing it on the newsstand shelf at one point. It just looked interesting, and I remember my older cousin. I've got a lot of cousins, but only one is older than me, and he had the toy.
Yeah. That's what my next question is, did you own the toy?
Yeah, I never owned the toy. He had the toy, and I thought it was, I mean, looking at it now, it's just like, I'm not sure what they were doing. They just had one toy for ROM. They didn't do anything else with it, but at the time, I thought it was pretty cool looking, and when I saw that he had a comic book, it made me interested to definitely pick it up from the newsstand.
That was definitely one toy that flopped.
Yes.
The comic was much more successful.
They didn't do anything. I mean, what they should have done is with everything.
I don't think they ever made a Dire Wrath, but I think the Dire Wrath was a Marvel creation.
It was a Marvel creation, and so it almost makes me feel like they should have gone back and forth hand in hand with Bill Mantlo creating some of these secondary characters and certainly his main villains, and they should have gone back to whether it was Hasbro or whatever, and they really should have made some other figures to go along with them. He might have been a little more popular on the toy end, but you're right. I mean, that was a huge flop, but the comic book itself lasted, you know, like I think almost 10 years.
Well, the Dire Wraiths don't show up in the IDW series, do they? I can't remember either.
And I read that.
I know some stuff was owned by Marvel, just like
because they had the
Micronauts. They own Bug, is probably their most visible, iconic design.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of the Micronauts, he's like one of the most prominent Micronaut, in my opinion. And you never had a toy of him. Whereas the Micronauts IDW series is more focused on the toy line. The toys that I had.
I almost want to say that the Dire Wraiths were in the IDW series from a couple years ago, but I don't remember for sure.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it's generic enough that they could use it, or I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I was a fan of the ROM comic book series for sure. Once I discovered it growing up, but it was a big one that was hit or miss for me in terms of finding it on the newsstand shelves. I'd get a bunch of issues and then I wouldn't see it again for 2 years, and then I'd pick up some more, and I've slowly gone back because they're often in dollar boxes and stuff, and depends on my mood.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into a question.
Sure.
This is a multi-layered question, by the way.
Oh.
It's from Martin. He says, what are your top three sci-fi series and top three horror series in the 70s and 80s? That's the first part of the question.
Series?
Two questions.
Oh, comic book series?
Didn't he say movies?
Sorry, movies.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot easier.
Yeah.
It's gonna have to rack my brain.
Mine are easy. I can do it. I can do mine.
Go ahead.
I'm not gonna include Star Trek or Star Wars because that's everybody's answer. But which I would say Star Wars is my favorite. But I'm gonna go with sci-fi series that I absolutely adore and love. Battle Beyond the Stars, which is there's a Seven Samurai movie that this kind of was based on and put into a sci-fi tone, and it stars John Boy Walton, and I love this one. This is one was I think it was 1980 or around that time frame. And this series was on Netflix about 5 years ago, and I rewatched it, and I still love it. The other two are Flash Gordon. I absolutely love it, even though it's got like a. Speaking of Queen with Bohemian Rhapsody, they did the whole soundtrack for Flash Gordon,
and yeah, they did.
I owned it on 8-track. This is how old I am, an 8-track player of Queen. Flash, I really dug, I love that series, that movie, that is just phenomenal to me, even though it's kind of goofy and kind of campy in some areas.
It's super campy, but you know what, I was introduced to it, you know, when it was on HBO in the early 80s, and I absolutely love it as well.
Yeah, saw it at the
Timothy
theater.
Dalton's in that one.
He is. He's the guy with the green arrow. He's like the green arrow from that planet. I love that scene where they're like testing Flash,
and they have that tree that scared me.
Yeah, they're having to put their hands in that tree, and that's how I feel every time I go into Barb's purse. That something's gonna bite me.
That is hilarious. I did not expect you to say that.
She has like a purse that's like Archer and Armstrong's satchel. I don't know what's going to come out of it.
Is she there?
Yeah, did she's
she
right here eating breakfast. She'll sneeze pretty soon, don't worry, after her breakfast. So that's my second one. My third one is The Last Starfighter. God, I love this one. And the guy that plays him is actually in Halloween 2, and Last Starfighter's very unique in that this guy's in a trailer park, and he's just really good at this video game, and he scores so high that an alien from outer space comes down and says, I want to recruit you to fight in this battle to save your planet. And he kind of goes down. So that video game was put as like to find the best pilots around the world. And he was one of them. And that's what that story is about. And I absolutely loved it. And I just recently realized I didn't own issue one because Marvel did an adaptation of The Last Starfighter. And I had 2 and 3, but never had one. And I just placed a MyComicShop.com order so I can complete that run. Yeah. So, yeah, those are my three. Sci-fi. I'll do the horror later.
Yeah, so, Chris, you ready or you want me to go?
Either way.
Go ahead.
Yes, and, well, I'll do what Mike said and exclude Star Wars also. That helps me narrow it down, but as usual, Mike's taste is very unique and mine aren't. Mine are kind of more typical choices for.
Oh, I wonder if we're going to have similar ones.
These. Or... And two of them are sci-fi and horror, so they kind of could go on either list. But I have Alien, the original, The Thing, and. Back to the Future.
Nice. Those are, yeah, those first two, you could really put them in either
yeah,
pool.
That, I actually consider those horror, even though they're really sci-fi.
They're sci-fi horror.
They're
yeah.
both. Yeah, sci-fi.
Yeah,
horror.
I know,
they,
but
they
to
definitely
me,
fit both
if,
categories.
If I was to put them into a category, they would fall more on my horror side.
Yeah, I think especially The Thing, but I think you could make an argument that the tone is horror, but the actual setting is sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's kind
for,
of both.
For both of them, kind of. I mean, I didn't really, like, I always thought of Alien as sci-fi until I actually watched it, and I was like, man, this is, like, directed like a horror movie.
Yeah. For sure.
Whereas Aliens, plural, is more leans more towards sci-fi. I don't think it's as horror as much. But anyways.
And yeah, Back to the Future, I would throw in my comedy pile. I don't know why, but
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, yeah. I mean, I the, it fits comedy and sci-fi. I would say.
It does. It does. Any kind of time travel fits sci-fi, definitely.
Yeah.
Well. So I'll go ahead. I will not exclude Star Wars because it was definitely the formative movie of my childhood. So the original Star Wars by far. But there's two other ones that came around that same time within 3 years that were really almost as important to me as well. And that's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T. Those three I absolutely adore.
I just think it's the Richard Dreyfuss thing. That's what I think. Your fascination with Richard Dreyfuss.
Well, he's only in one out of the three.
I know. But you also love Jaws, too.
Jaws is amazing. Martin, Jaws is amazing.
It is. I don't know
Jaws
what his problem
really
is with Jaws, because it's a really good horror film.
But I can't wait to show. They've seen Star Wars, my kids, but I'll wait a few years and then I'll show them E.T. I don't know what it was about Close Encounters that I absolutely loved as a little kid, because watching it more recently, it's not really like a kid's movie. It's
that's why I think
it's kind of bored for.
That's
it,
why.
It would be boring
that's why you. Shock me with that pick, because
I
saw Close Encounters as a kid, like at the theater, and this was like this was right around Star Wars, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, 77, 78.
And I was
right around
was like looking at my dad. I was like, "This ain't no Star Wars. This sucks."
I don't know what it was. I absolutely was fascinated with it.
And
I almost watched it like it was a documentary, like it was real or something like that.
I never watched it since. And I might feel about it differently now, but I was pretty young when that came out.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I saw it in the theater.
Well, I saw
younger than you.
I saw two movies at the theater that bored me to tears. And it was Star Trek, the motion picture, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah. I was like 5 years old when Close Encounters came out, and I don't know why, but I loved it.
That's interesting, because a lot of the stuff doesn't happen. Like, alien stuff is in the very end, right?
Yes.
This is fascinating that you latched onto this so young. Like,
it is.
I think it's because of the realism. It has to be the realism of the situation or something. Like, this is a more realistic take or something.
I think I was fascinated with that type of premise as a little kid, and just the fact that, like, oh my God, could aliens really come here? Could I really get on a ship and fly away with it? And, like, I used to, like, dream about that as, like, a little kid. Like, oh, I'd love to, like, just leave and, like, go and explore. And it really appealed to me.
Well, then The Last Starfighter should be up your alley.
Oh, I love The Last Starfighter. I think it's amazing.
Because it's
so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that movie. But yeah, so those are, I'm definitely, you know, I understand it's easy to, you know, you want to take Star Wars out because that's, you know, but I just can't.
I'm not saying Star Wars is above and beyond anything I named. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's my favorite too. I just wanted to choose stuff that
was a little bit different.
Yeah, that was a little bit In other words, wasn't going to be in everybody's list.
Right. You know what? The last Starfighter on Blu-ray is $5.99 on Amazon right now.
It has the girl too. That's in Night of the Living Comet. She's the girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
The night of, didn't you say you fell asleep during that one? The Night of the Comet, or?
No, I might have, but then I woke. Well,
that's
I watched
a, that was a good one too.
Yeah,
Night of the Living Comet.
But it's the Night of the Comet or something like that.
It's the Night of the Comet. Yeah. I'm just laughing because you're combining it with Night of the Living Dead. E.T. is up there for me too. That was the first VHS tape that my family ever got was E.T.
Really?
And one of the only ones we ever had, like, because then we ended up taping stuff, but.
Did you guys buy the E.T. video game from Atari? That's what I want to know.
My brother got it for Christmas or his birthday, and boy, was that horrible. All we kept doing was falling down in a hole.
We'd
levitate back up, and we'd fall back down again.
Me and my brother got the E.T. video game, and I think we played it for 5 minutes each and then just said, fuck this.
That was
never played it again.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah.
But I hear that if you really play it, like really play it and have patience, it's all right.
That's funny, though.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know either.
Maybe.
Well, I heard that in that documentary, so I don't know. That documentary is really good documentary about the E.T. garbage dump. I mean,
yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are mine. So we can go on to horror if you guys want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My horror is going to be probably match up with somebody here, but I'm going to go with the earliest one is probably Salem's Lot. I love that one. And the next one is Fright Night because I can watch that movie over and over.
You're so
again.
Cool, Brewster.
Yeah, I love that one. And the last one is Lost Boys.
So oh, wow.
80s, those are my thing. Like, I just recently watched Lost Boys again. I think I've seen that movie about over 20 times. Each one of these movies I've seen over, well, Salem's Lot I've probably only seen 5. The other two I've seen over 20 times. So, next.
Yeah, I like Fright Night and Lost Boys. And I didn't choose them, but I like those.
What are you going to choose?
I forgot I was next. I was interjecting instead of taking command.
That's okay.
So, like I said, Alien and The Thing could work for both lists, but I'll choose different ones to mention more movies.
Sure.
Were you going to say something, Mike?
No. I thought you were going to say it's my same list. I killed two birds with one stone.
you're trying to reject that. So not in the order, but I'll choose Halloween, the original.
Still holds
Exorcist.
Up today.
Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
That's the another Exorcist. One that holds up today. That one freaks me out.
Yeah, I don't find a lot of horror movies frightening, but that one freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah.
And The Shining, which I went through a period of, like, at one point of, like, Stephen King loyalty, where the fact that it's a lot different from the book I didn't like that because I wanted to be, like, a Stephen King loyalist or something, but now at this point I like both. It was one of the first Stephen King books. No, it was the first Stephen King book I ever read. But I think it's a really good movie too.
I agree.
I think the changes kind of work for it as a film. They did a mini series later on that was more faithful to the book.
Yeah, it's like the guy from the Wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
In some ways, it's like just let, I almost kind of felt like, let the book be the book and the movie be the movie. Like, certain things work better for different mediums, you know?
Yeah. I thought the made for TV, whatever it was, movie, miniseries, it was all right. But
yeah,
I mean, I enjoy the book and the movie both a lot more.
The Jack Nicholson one, though, is so, it's so creepy. It has this it's the feeling of isolationism, or if that's even a word, being isolated in the middle of nowhere with nowhere to go. And that movie, like, captures it down packed. Plus, it has, like, some of the creepiest scenes that I've ever seen. Like, if you go stay at the, what is that hotel, Barb? The Stanley Hotel. The interesting thing about that is they have one channel that just shows The Shining over and over again.
That's pretty funny. But not unexpected, but pretty funny.
Yeah, it plays it like 24/7.
That's awesome. All right, I'm going to mention mine.
By the way, I just want to say I love all those movies. Those are all movies that are totally rewatchable. And The Exorcist being one of the movies that still scares me to this day. Like, it still holds up. And then Halloween, I just rewatched, and it's amazing. Like, to me...
Yeah, we did so.
To me, it's, like, frightening. Like, that's... But because they've desensitized me over the years... The new one's not frightening to me, or the new incarnations, because I become desensitized. But because of what that movie was and when it came out and rewatching it, it's still scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because he just stands there. Like, it's, I don't know. He just sits there, like, watching.
Really, it's really well directed.
Yeah,
I think it's one of the main things about that film that makes it hold up is a lot of the horror comes from the way that it's directed. Like you said, he'll just appear in the background, you know, as this, like, as you said, just standing there. But the way that it's directed really is really well done.
Well, he's driving a station wagon, and it's creepy. Like, I'm like, I'm still, even to this day, I'm like telling Turner, I know they're smoking weed in the car, but turn around and look around. This guy's following you. You saw him earlier. Turn around. Oh, man.
All right. Here, I totally agreed with Chris's, so much so as that the three that I wrote down, two of them he has already mentioned, so I picked two others. But my original list had both Exorcist and The Shining on it. So in lieu of that, I just say that I 100% agree with you, Chris, and both of them immediately came to mind, and for all the reasons you guys discussed. But instead, I'll go ahead and say that one of mine is Creepshow, the original Creepshow from the 80s. I remember seeing that when I was young, and I just loved that anthology way of showing three or four.
Does that one have
short stories?
Does that one have, like, the where that guy's body falls on the ground and all the roaches come out from underneath?
Yeah. That's the last story of that particular.
That's
one.
Pretty creepy. That's memorable. If I remember that, I've only seen that movie once.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I've watched it just so many times, and I think that's what I kind of was thinking of. Like, what could I just pop in at any point, and I could watch it. And so, the other one, probably no surprise that since I don't want to repeat Chris, I picked Jaws. Which I consider a horror movie. Definitely action. Yeah, definitely. It's an action horror movie, but it's still a horror movie. So we spoke about that just a little while ago. And then
it did scare a lot of people to go to the beach. Like,
that's right.
A lot of people were afraid to go in the water because of that movie.
Well, it's so grounded in something that obviously it's exaggerated, but something that could easily happen and does happen, you know? So just, But my third pick that nobody selected is, of course, Return of the Living Dead.
Which that's the one that I knew was going to be on your list.
Yeah, my all-time favorite zombie movie. It doesn't mean that it's the best made zombie movie, but it is an amazing zombie movie. It's got plenty of humor in it as well, but I think it totally works as a zombie movie. And it's also, if you ever see any type of meme or hear anyone say anything about a zombie wanting to eat your brain, it's because of that movie. No movie before that specifically said that zombies like to eat brains, just that they never eat people in general.
Well, they never talked before.
Well, right. But this was the first time that they specifically said that it was the brain they were looking for.
You have that woman that's just a spine and a head going, more brains, right?
Brain, 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 brain!
More brains!
So, yeah, I mentioned that we had just seen that on the big screen for a special screening the week before Halloween. So that was a lot of fun seeing it up on the big screen.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen it in the theater before. I'd only seen it on TV. But yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I seriously could watch it at any point.
Cool. They're all very... I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
On the horror movies, I agree with all of you guys. They're all great picks, like, to me. On the sci-fi ones, I don't know about the Close Encounters. I still haven't been able to go back to it to this day.
You got
to
go back and see what you think. Did Barb like Close Encounters?
Did you like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Barb? Did you ever see it with Richard Dreyfuss? She said it's all right.
Oh boy.
I do like the soundtrack because they had a cool song there, because I remember having the record that had like sci-fi horror themes, and it had Star Wars, it had The Spy Who Loved Me, and it had Close Encounters on it, and I liked the theme.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a fun question.
Yeah,
to answer.
It's not over.
I saw that he said several parts.
He says, do you guys think Amazing Spider-Man 121 is really the line that separates the Silver and the Bronze Age? What are some other books of the era that signal that change?
Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I think that's one. I don't know if there's really just one comic, though, that you can point at. I know another one that is brought up a lot is Speedy doing heroin.
Yeah.
Where it just kind of shows that comics were tackling more world issues and stuff.
Yeah, I've real heard world that one issues brought up a lot too. You're right. Yeah. I was just gonna say that I almost feel like it's a tone. Like I think of the 70s, and I think of like 70s comics, and I think of like Tomb of Dracula, and I think of some of the other horror ones.
You're actually going down the path I was going to go down.
Yeah.
The 70s was bringing back the horror comics.
The horror comics.
They had to stop doing.
The street-level comics like Luke Cage. That's what I think of when I think of...
Well, I actually think of diversity. It actually started to introduce black characters in their own titles, female characters like Miss Marvel and She-Hulk. There was more of it. So like, especially on the Marvel side, you can kind of like see the different tone. There's definitely a tone to it. There's definitely some hardcore politics in the Bronze Age about people trying to make statements about Vietnam or the current climate, political climate. It's definitely a lot of stuff. Drugs, like you guys just mentioned.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think you're right about that. I think a lot of it has to do with the counterculture and people kind of changing their viewpoint about Vietnam and what resulted in a lot of media, movies and everything else, but we saw it in comic books too. And so more than just a single issue, it feels like more like a shift in tone and a shift in the actual titles that, and like you said, especially Marvel, started putting out. That's what I think of when I think of Bronze Age, or those, that diversity that you were talking about, and then of course the 70s horror Marvel comics.
Yeah, it's both things. The tackling things like issues like drug abuse and stuff, and the monsters returning to comics and stuff, all of it can kind of be tied to the Comics Code Authority being loosened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the early 70s, they started to let all that stuff in, and weren't as strict as they were in the 60s.
Right, made it possible for them to actually do some of these comic books.
Yeah. Denny O'Neil is a big, I think of Denny O'Neil when it comes to the Bronze Age, as an editor.
Mm-hmm. At DC Comics. I think of him too as the hard traveling heroes. Because
yeah, writer and editor, but just
Green Lantern, Green Arrow was very much in that vein of everything we just said, except for the horror. Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was in the diversity, the politics, the drug abuse. It had everything.
Yeah.
Have you guys read Tomb of Dracula? I have like 5 issues that I've read individually on their own, but I've never read it.
Some of it on this show.
Yeah, the first handful of issues, I think.
Yeah,
I remember you covering some even on the episodes I've been on, but I've never gone through and actually like read a run of them, of Tomb of Dracula. I was just wondering if it's worth it.
Oh, I think it's worth it. I mean, I haven't read it yet, but I need to sit down and get into the omnibus. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's just the artwork alone, but you have Marv Wolfman on a lot of it too, so he's great.
Yeah.
And that to me is some of Gene Colan's best work. Mm-hmm. Is in Tomb of Dracula.
I think he's got the perfect kind of tone for that book.
And he kept the same tone in Night Force, but that series wasn't as big a hit.
Yeah.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Wolfman really seems to love that Night Force. I noticed that I haven't been reading new comics, but I look at solicitations once in a while just to see what's being put out. And I noticed that he's bringing it back in that Raven comic that he's writing.
Yeah.
Baron Winters.
Baron Winters. Yeah, he seems to really like that concept.
Oh, they're in Raven, I think.
That's what I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just...
yeah, it hasn't. That series has not worked for me as much as I probably would like, but it's all right.
All right, let's go ahead and go to your comic, Chris, or TV.
Mabel, why don't one of you guys go? Mabel's barking at something.
Okay, I'll go next then.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and kill both two birds with one stone. These are my 5 out of 5 books, and I absolutely loved them. I read Sergeant Rock 356, and it has like 5 stories in it. It's just awesome. The first story is fascinating because Sergeant Rock has to go scouting for all his men. Like he basically says, I would do any job that I'd ask my men to do. And he feels that he doesn't want to risk any of his team's lives because they don't have an attention to detail that he does. Like he says, when he goes out scouting, he uses all of his senses, sight, smell, taste. Well, he didn't mention taste, but all the other ones. So he goes out and he smells something and he immediately said, oh, crap, that's smoke. And sure enough, he looked a little further and there was a Panzer tank with a Nazi smoking outside the tank. And he basically takes out the tank by himself with a grenade and a machine gun. It's just awesome. He throws the grenade near the tank, which doesn't do shit. But what it does is it throws the guys off. And then he puts his machine gun in the little area where they have a window to view out of, and he just starts firing it rapidly, so the bullets are bouncing around in the tank and killing everybody. And then he comes back, and he gets chewed out by a captain. The captain's saying, "You're a leader of this group, Easy Company. You shouldn't go out there and risk your life when they're... If they lose you, they don't have the leadership." And he kind of has like a valid point, like from a leadership perspective. He says, "You need to send your other men out." So on the next mission, he sends little Sure Shot, and he goes out and he says, "I'm leaving this lieutenant here with you, and he's going to be the commander of Easy Company just to make sure that you guys do what I say." So little Sure Shot goes out. He never comes back. He said, "That's weird." So he sends out Bulldozer. Bulldozer goes out. He never comes back. And then Sergeant Rock says, "Something's wrong, man. These are, I know my men. They didn't come back. I'm gonna go out." So he goes out with that lieutenant. They end up going to a town. They see some French people there, but he notices they have guns under the tables, and he knows something's wrong. So they get ready to start firing. And Bulldozer and Little Sure Shot are captured on the top of the building by a bunch of Nazis, and they manage to knock one Nazi over the building, and they get free, and then they take over that little town again, kill all the Nazis. And then that guy goes back to that captain, and he says, "I could see why Sergeant Rock does what he does." And then it had a quick little thing about a tank, an M41 Walker Bulldog tank that was used in the Korean War. All of these have like good history things, so if you're into that, it'll tell you all the details of that particular tank. It had a story called Guts, which was essentially about a bunch of rookies that hadn't seen a fight before, and they kind of just arrive and they're kind of green, and one of the captains says, I need you to go with this experienced guy, and he's going to show you the ropes of how to do scouting." Well, they end up like in this like garbage dump, and the guy says, "I'm going to scout further. You guys are cowards. I'm not..." Like, they didn't shoot at something, so he says, "I'm going to go further. You guys need to stay here." He goes further and actually gets captured by the Nazis, and the Nazis torture him. And they get all the information out of him because they're like pulling out his eyes. They're really torturing him. And the guy witnesses it. He gets like in one of the cranes at the junkyard and dumps this huge magnet on top of him. And he kills most of the Nazis, and they free the guy only so he dies. They pretty much beat him to death. And when they get back, they're honest, and I mean they lie sort of, and they said, you know, that he died a hero, even though he betrayed, you know, the unit. They don't tell him that guy did it, because he did have guts. He just was pretty much beaten to death. And I imagine with Thresholds of Pain that you, after a while, you don't even know what you're doing anymore, you know. But That was one story, and then the last story is a pretty sad story, as it talks about Sergeant Rock reminiscing about, he used to give names to everybody of Easy Company. They'd have a name of a nickname of who they were, and this guy's called Nobody because he never really gave him a name and never really paid attention to him. All he did is they were getting ready to camp for the night. And he puts this guy in a foxhole by himself out front. And this particular soldier, that night the Nazis attacked. And it was bad. I mean, there was a lot of Nazis. And they wake up in the morning and they find out that they have this acronym called BAR. That stands for Browning M1918 BAR. It's actually a gun. It's a Browning automatic rifle. And he had that in the foxhole, and he essentially, this one guy never spoke a word. He used that gun, and he's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he just shot like hundreds of Nazis before they actually came across to kill all of Easy Company. And Sergeant Rock was just like, "I'll always remember Nobody because I never like acknowledged him, and he pretty much saved our lives." So it was pretty freaking powerful. I absolutely loved it. God, I loved it so much. It's bringing tears to my eyes. All right. So the next one is Men of War. And this this is like hardcore shit. It made me actually go Google stuff. The first issue, this is Ulysses Hazard, and he was a kid that grew up with polio, and he's kind of like a cap, like real weak, not made for the military, except he's like self-built himself up. He's African American, built himself up to be like this optimal soldier, this ultimate badass. Except they didn't want an African American to fight, so they gave him all the menial jobs. They made him clean latrines. They called him. They put him on a gravedigger unit, and I didn't know what this was, so I had to go Google it. I was like, "What does this mean, a gravedigger unit?" Well, when they would like attack beaches and stuff like that, they felt that it would decrease morale if the next batch of soldiers hit and there were all these dead Americans. So the gravedigger unit would go there after things calmed down and they would like take all the bodies and sort of bury them or take them away out of sight. And that's why they called him the nickname Gravedigger. And he had this friend, and they were both black, and they would go do this, and they were treated like crap by this white lieutenant. It's sort of like a thing on racism. And one night, a Nazi plane comes in and starts shooting up everything. And one of his friends jumps in front of the white lieutenant, saves his life, and gets killed. And he kind of loses it after that. And he goes AWOL because he lost his best friend and he can't fight. They won't even give him a gun. So these guys that are in the Gravedigger unit, they won't give them guns to even protect themselves or anything. They just have to go out there with a shovel. And that's all they have. They're equipped. A matter of fact, they had this thing where these Nazi guys were gonna rape this girl inside of this little town, and Gravedigger only had a shovel, and he ran in there and beat those Nazis with a shovel. And these guys had guns. He just grabbed a shovel and beat the crap out of them. He's like, bam, 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 and then the white guy comes and says, "Oh man, these citizens were able to fight themselves off." He wouldn't acknowledge that Gravedigger saved their lives. So he went AWOL, escaped back to the States, went to the Pentagon. He wanted to tell his story to the to these big guys and say, "You got to let me fight." Well, he gets there. And he has to raid in there. He has to take out a bunch of MPs. He took out like 30 MPs to get to the guy that he needs to talk to. He didn't kill him. He hurt him, obviously. And he gets to that guy and he says, "You got through all these MPs?" He says, "You must be an awesome soldier. So I'm going to code name you Gravedigger and I'm going to send you on these missions." And he goes on all these crazy missions and he ends back up with that lieutenant. And he's a captain now. He got promoted. He got from a sergeant to a captain. He got promoted because he's such a badass. And that lieutenant doesn't acknowledge him. He's still real racist. A matter of fact, he says, "I'm going to court martial you for AWOL." And he goes, "No, I have all the letters here, and I'm your boss, and you're going to treat me like an officer." And there was a tank embedded in a mountain, and there were several Nazi soldiers, and they were killing a bunch of Americans. And they couldn't get a plane in there because the mountain was shi the tank would just go back in the mountain, and the plane couldn't do shit. But Gravedigger found his way in there and blew stuff up. And again, this lieutenant was taking credit for it. So it's a crazy book, and it's awesome. Like I am like, this Gravedigger guy is one of my heroes now. I mean, he's beat the shit out of these Nazis with just a shovel, and they had guns. And then it has a backup story of Enemy Ace, and it's such a weird. You think of Enemy Ace, he's a bad guy. He's on the German side. Why are we making a German a hero? It's such a weird concept. But he's a noble Nazi fighter pilot. And this story involves that he keeps on shooting. There's another pilot, I think he's an English pilot, that has a wild boar on his helmet. And he keeps shooting this guy down. And he keeps coming back to life. And the enemy ace is like, "Am I losing my mind?" He even goes to the hospital a couple times. And he's like, every time I go out, he's out there killing more of our soldiers and more of our plane fighter pilots. What's going on? And it turns out that the Europeans just dressed up all of their guys the same. So enemy ace kind of thought he was killing all, he did kill all these planes, but it made it look like he was alive over and over again and kind of played like psychological warfare with them. So it was kind of a cool little backup story I liked. But
sounds like
yes,
some good stuff.
Man of War 1-3 and Sergeant Rock 356, they're amazing.
Good stuff.
So
Chris, are you back?
Yeah, I can cover the only other one I had pretty quickly. It is Hawkman number 11. So this is the 80s series that was going on when Crisis on Infinite Earths happened and kind of really just sort of got ignored in the shakeup of DC's comics for a while until they ended it and decided to finally change things up with Hawkworld and stuff. But it I've said before though, it is a good if short run that is good 80s style comics. This issue sees the Hawks back out in space after most of the series has taken place on Earth, and they're in a ship with the villain Darkwing, not the duck but the hawk. And Darkwing's real name is Darren Ved. He's remote controlling the ship, and he is trying to fly it into a sun. Katar and Shira have to come up with a way to stop the ship, and they of course manage to do so and get it to warp before it impacts with the sun, and are able to knock Darkwing out. So they have to deal with them, and they head towards Thanagar. When they get to Thanagar, though, they know that Thanagar has had issues. They were on Earth because they were trying to thwart a, this series originally spun out of the miniseries Shadow War of Hawkman, and so they were on Earth to thwart that the attempt by Thanagar to invade Earth, and so they're going back to a Thanagar that has had a lot of problems. There was a plague that caused problems with their technology, and a woman named Hyathis is sort of the one that's to blame for the more militaristic approach that the race that they were taking. When they get to Thanagar, they are attacked by a group of wingmen, the sort of police force that they both used to be a part of. And they're surprised to find out that the person in charge of the wingmen is still the same person, Rule Pintar, who was a friend of Ketar's father. They're surprised because his approach is not the type that would attack with no questions asked, like had just happened to them. So but he seemed to take in an attitude that Thanagar is going to change, that the Thanagar that they used to know is gone. In the sort of thing that would so it sort of seems like what's going on in Thanagar is the sort of thing that would never happen again today, where people are sort of giving in to military might instead of somebody that's more concerned with rebuilding than going after conquest and a thoughtful ruler rather than someone's just that's just interested in display of strength. And
it's good that we don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. It turns out that there's a Thanagar ruling council that's using a robot of Hyathis for their own purposes, which is something that the Hawks discover. But the issue ends with the ruling council getting the better of the Hawks and getting them stuck in a trap. It wasn't an amazing issue, but it's another solid issue in this run that just kind of keeps kind of building on past issues. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, I think there's 17 issues in the run, but it's just kind of like a lesser known run that is worth reading along with like the miniseries that led into it.
Nice. So
that's all I was going to say about that. Was that my first book? No, I mean, obviously that wasn't my first book, but was that my...
Were you not here for your first book?
What day is it?
your first was book was Suicide book, Squad number two.
That was only my second book. Okay, I meant that to be my last book, but that's okay.
Okay.
It's fine.
It's fine. All right, I'll cover mine. This is my last book, my second and last. Fantastic Four number 230. By Doug Mensch and Bill Sienkiewicz and Joe Sinnott. This one, I read the ROM in this one back to back, and like I said before, holy smokes! I mean, there is like so much explanation in these. It's very, very dense. You come into this with these two opposing forces. This female character named Fire Frost, and the male character is the Ebon Seeker. And apparently these are like almost like cosmic entities, and you're kind of thrown into the middle of this. I'm assuming that this started in the previous issue, which I didn't read. So the Fantastic Four are talking to Fire Frost, and she... goes to explain their entire backstory, Fire Frost and Ebon, the Ebon Seeker's backstory. So it turns out that these two were lovers from ancient race. This is in the far future, and basically the entire civilization had began a decline, and so what they decided to do was search for other cultures and civilizations throughout the universe in hopes of revitalizing their own. And these two, named Xanth and Shireen, volunteered for this mission. So they did. They found an old derelict... What did they say? They didn't really describe it. Just a battered remnant of not a spaceship, but almost like a probe. So they were hoping that would have some clues to another civilization. What they didn't realize in time was that they were in the event horizon of a black hole by getting close enough to this thing, and so the probe and the alien spaceship itself got sucked into the black hole. Of course, they were disintegrated and so forth. They entered the center of the black hole, where apparently there are some other life forces there that spoke to both of them.
It spoke to Shireen, and she gained more positive aspects of the conversation, and she became that Fire Frost. The male Xanth, for whatever reason, only took on the darker aspects of these black hole voices, creatures, and he became the Ebon Seeker. And what it turns out is that he is full of energy, and as he goes to different planets, he basically is drawn to planets with life on them, and in between he starts to lose mass and energy and shrinks, and until he finds another civilization, he continues to shrink and becomes sort of like a black hole, is just like a pinprick of a previous sun. He kind of implodes, destroying the entire planet and everyone on it, and then he's reborn again after that. And so this just keeps going on and on and on, and now he's on Earth. So the Fantastic Four finally come up with an idea with Fire Frost's help, and Reed Richards' logic is that in the regular universe, he keeps losing energy as he goes through existence until he implodes on a planet and regains that energy back. His logic is that if he draws them into the negative zone, the opposite will happen, and he'll naturally gain energy, and he won't have to destroy anything, and he'll realize that that the Fantastic Four are not enemies. So that's what he does, is he sets up a barrier around the Baxter building, and he gets the Thing and the Human Torch and Frostfire to draw the Ebon Seeker within range of where his, basically where the perimeter is of where he's going to transfer the Baxter building and blocks around it into the negative zone. And he does just that. And sure enough, his hypothesis is correct, and the Ebon Seeker starts restoring strength on his own, and him and Frostfire kind of then meet back up. She reminds, because he was kind of out of his mind, she reminds him of who he is and what they originally were trying to do, and they kind of go off into the negative zone, knowing now that he's not going to subject any other civilizations to destruction. And the thing that was interesting here, there's two things. One, that after this is over, the rest of the Fantastic Four find Reed Richards just sitting back and reading a book very casually, and they were kind of surprised that after all of the excitement that he could just be sitting relaxing. And he goes to discuss that he's reading this particular book from who did he say wrote this? Oh, Carl Sagan, called Murmurs of Earth. And he's reading all about the space exploration probe Voyager that we launched, and how it's going through the outer planets and how it has all of the information on it about our civilization, and that in 1986 it's going to end up leaving our solar system and so forth. And he says, you know, who's to say that perhaps it was the actual Voyager that these two life forms, the Fire Frost and Ebon Seeker, didn't actually encounter, and we're actually kind of like indirectly the cause of all this. So that was, he almost says it as if that's a fact, not a hypothesis. So that was kind of interesting. But then the other thing is, the very last couple panels, they reveal through the Thing asking, okay, this is all well and good, but how are you going to get us back home? And they reveal that the Baxter building and the surrounding blocks are still in the negative zone, and that he is not able, for whatever reason, he's not able to get them back home, that they're trapped in the negative zone. And that's the end of that issue. So that was interesting, because when as soon as you saw him just sitting back reading, you assume everything's back to normal, and then you find out in the very last panel that they're still in the negative zone. They can't get away. So this was, I mean, it was an interesting story, but it was a little bit long-winded from my taste this morning.
What were your tastes? You just didn't want to read anything with a lot of words?
I was just surprised that, like, what I was looking for is, because I've been covering, seems like because of the stack that I have of unread comics, older comics, I keep gravitating to, like, the same titles, and especially a lot of DC titles, so I wanted to read some Marvel titles this morning. So I grabbed them just pretty much randomly, but they were a little too long for me this morning. I would have liked a little bit more an emphasis on the action and not so much on just exposition. And both of them were so much exposition. It wasn't even funny. I mean, it went on and on and on about, like, just origins and backstories and just, I mean, static panels with just blocks of exposition. And while, you know, a lot of times that doesn't bother me, this morning I was hoping for a little bit more action, and it's just what I randomly grabbed just didn't have that. So I didn't like it quite as much as if I knew what I was getting into ahead of time. And to your point, maybe wasn't more in the mood for that. But, you know, I
but you don't care about that. You're supposed to read alphabetically.
Not my old comics.
Matter of fact, your Fantastic Four should have come before ROM.
Yeah, I read ROM first.
That's why you didn't enjoy it.
Maybe. See, I didn't read them in the right order.
Yeah, that's right. You got out of your own pattern, and it messed you up.
No, well, for old comics, though, I read whatever I feel like reading.
And that's why you don't enjoy them. You got to go back to the old formula. Yeah.
I got a question for you, and not so much for Chris, because Chris is already in this situation. But I was thinking about this as I was sitting here reading these. If you, because of financials or, I don't know, for whatever reason, if for some reason you were given a choice where you had to pick either no longer buying any new comics or no longer buying any old back issues, what would you choose?
I would go with the new comics, because
you would?
I have plenty of old comics to read. Yeah. So the situation I'm in, and then those new comics, they become old comics.
I know, but you can't cheat. So if you would have picked the opposite, you know, then that just means, like, from that point on, you can never buy, like, you know, if we're starting now, then
yeah,
you can't
I would need to know what was going forward in DC. If it was any other universe, I wouldn't care.
That's interesting. My answer would change,
but, like, somebody asked me that question. If you only had $100, I think it's Daryl. He said, only if you only had $100 of spending money a month, what would it end up? What would you get? And I said, I would get whatever DC I could get, even if it's bad, because I just need to know even though continuity doesn't always play, I need to know what the happening in the universe, because in my mind, everything's in continuity. My mind forms continuity if it doesn't exist. It fits into the puzzle.
Yeah.
So
that's a good answer. I think right now, where I am right now, I think I would pick to continue to buy old issues, because I've been enjoying doing that. But just new stuff.
If you threw in that I could still use the apps, let's say if there was a DC Unlimited and a Marvel Unlimited, mm-hmm. and I could still spend that $7 a month or whatever it is, and then get paper, I would go old issues, because then if I had that 6 month thing, I wouldn't care about that, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, exactly. That makes sense. Yeah. I was just curious, like, which way you would go if you were forced to.
Like, Daryl also asked me a question. He's like, okay, you have every DC comic that you could possibly want, everyone in the library on your iPad. Or you could have paper. You can only have 100 comics, paper, and you're on a deserted island. What would you choose? And I said, well, I choose the goddamn paper because the battery life, there's no, on a deserted island, there's not going to be any electricity to charge the damn iPad. So I choose the paper. Plus, if I got really cold,
you were thinking.
I could burn the paper. I can't do shit with that iPad.
That's true. You could have as many comics on that iPad as you want, but it's not going to do you any good if you can't get it to turn on. That's a good point. All right. Well, that's all that I have. Do you guys have another one to cover?
One more, Chris?
Yeah, sorry. I meant to spend more time on this one than on Hawkman, but I'll just mention it briefly. The other thing that I read was Detective Comics 575, which is the first issue of Batman Year 2. Mm. I read it in a I have the story in a trade. It's probably was the first trade of the story because it's from 1990. But anyway, this is the story where it's Alan Davis does the first issue because he had been the penciler prior to this, and then Todd McFarlane takes over and does the rest of the story. I think one of the most interesting things was that there's a introduction by the writer Mike W. Barr that he wrote in 1989. But there are some things that I thought was interesting in it, that the story that he used for this was kind of had its origins in something that he wrote in 84 called Batman 1980. He just kind of wrote it because he wanted to. It wasn't something that he was asked to write, and he showed it to DC and they weren't really interested in it at the time. And so he kind of, when they asked him to write Year 2, he dusted that off and he had to throw some stuff out because of Year 1 and it didn't really work and stuff, but he based it on that. And the other thing that I was kind of thought was interesting that he said that originally they were going to have Year 1 and Year 2 run concurrently in Batman and Detective, and then it was suggested that they do it, you know, chronologically. I guess his goal kind of with this was he wanted to start to introduce some of the characters that were big pieces of the Batman mythos that didn't show up in Year 2. So that's why Leslie Tompkins is prominent in the story. I think I'm pretty sure I read this before. One of the things that is a feature of the story is that there's this previous vigilante of Gotham City that comes back called the Reaper. And I always kind of found like his design, which has a skull mask, and he holds these gauntlets that have spikes around the handhold, and then these Reapers, like small Reaper scythes. And I always found his design kind of like seemed real like almost the 90s before the 90s. I still don't find the design super appealing, but as the way that he looks, he
he's
is
awesome.
Much more...
Just put some like Blue Oyster Cult on. And you'll be able to rock out to that Reaper. Matter of fact, the first appearance of the Reaper shows up in the Walmart DC Supersize book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because His origin's really interesting. Speaking of, like, well, I don't know. I think this is probably Reaper 2, like, because I doubt if Reaper 1 has anything to do with any this character, because Reaper 1 was, his parents were Jewish Holocaust survivors, and there's this weird town in DC, I mean, in the DC universe, where they always have, like, these parades. And they have Marvel characters and DC characters in them and all that crazy stuff. And they always go back to that town. Like, this is the third story I've read where they go back to that town. And the Reaper was trying to seek revenge on a Nazi doctor that was, like, torturing people, was in the United States hiding. And the Reaper was after him, and he was kind of killing everybody in his path. And it's a very different Reaper. you kind of feel sympathetic, but he's like massacring a lot of innocents to get what he wants. And Batman has to take him out. He almost kills Robin. He almost kills Dick Grayson in that issue.
Mm. One thing about this trade is that it's the real glossy paper, and I don't think it's flattering for the issues themselves.
Yeah.
I think it would look better in the original. But so I'm not really crazy about that. But there were things about this issue I liked. You know, it's Leslie Tompkins and a more inexperienced Batman and stuff. But yeah, he encounters the Reaper who's made a return. And because he was originally prior to Batman, and he at least in this first encounter, he gets the best of Batman. Batman has to escape, and he gets back to Wayne Manor and is in pretty rough shape. Leslie Tompkins is very much like the mother figure here, you know. To Bruce, she knows the secret, and when he comes back to Wayne Manor, both Alfred and Leslie are there, like his parents. But it ends kind of on an interesting note, where Bruce goes into a secret compartment in the base of a huge portrait of his parents, and pulls out the weapon the gun that killed them, saying that perhaps the only way to avenge them is to fight my enemy on his own terms, to fight the kind of men who killed them with the weapon that made me what I am, the gun that took their lives. It's made it sound more ominous than what his actual intentions are, but the cover on the trade is the kind of famous image, Alan Davis image of Batman holding a gun. So it was decent, but maybe a little better than I liked it than the first time I read it. But it's not like I wouldn't say it's the highlight of the Alan Davis run on Detective.
Hmm.
So which was short, but
yeah, there's some of most of this I've never read before. I had been missing these issues. I've since bought them, but I'm actually reading up through all these, you know, the whole series. So I'm not at that point yet. I'm still actually, I think, oh, I don't even know where I am. But I'm still quite a bit away anyhow.
Yeah, I just started with the start of the Alan Davis run.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks like I just finished off like the 550, so I still have a little ways to go.
Yeah, so that's it for me.
You got something else, Michael?
No, I just had a quick question for you. Did you read the Green Lantern number one yet?
No, it hasn't come yet. I should be getting it on Tuesday.
It just came out this week, didn't it?
I did. I was very underwhelmed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
But I'm not the biggest Morrison fan
on I'm the not
planet either.
Either.
So
no.
I actually liked the little 5-page preview more than I did the issue.
Oh, that doesn't bode well.
No, it might bode well for you. Maybe I'll lower your expectations and then it'll have the opposite effect.
Yeah, that's true.
That sometimes works.
Are you caught up on Batman? Did you read, I think it's 57?
The last one I read was the one where the conclusion to KGB Beast.
Okay. I don't want to get into it or spoil it. The only thing I'm going to say is that I was stunned to listen to the Gotham by Geeks episode where they covered it and did not seem to really bat an eye over how that particular story arc ended. Because I thought, a very big deal, but they didn't really address it at all. If you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I can find out in 2 seconds. I have cover B sitting right here.
Well, let's say a spoiler. So so we're gonna say something about Batman 57. So skip ahead for a minute or so, if you haven't read it yet, because we normally don't talk about.
Or
new
we could
comics.
Just why don't we wrap up and then. You can talk about it after the wrap up, and that way
we
people
could do that.
Turn it off if they don't want to hear.
That
a
way,
spoiler,
Chris right? could hang up.
Oh, that's true. that's what
that's
Chris
the
was
real
to
reason.
Say.
And that was just the nice political correctness way to say it.
That's my polite way of saying it. I don't care what.
I don't give a fuck about that stuff. All right. Well, you can reach us where. At geekbrunchpodcast.com.
Yeah.
And you can reach us at, what are you again? Robotfacedog? At robotfacedog.
You tweeted
dog
me
on...
earlier. You got it right
I know,
earlier.
I couldn't
robot,
find
robot
it.
Robot Wolfface.
Yep.
That I actually got the robot part right. That's the only way I found you. Because the autofill, found you when I typed robot.
Okay.
I knew there was robot monkey in there or something. I don't know what it was. Robot waffle face? I don't remember.
It's whatever you want.
It's whatever Android you want. Fox, dude.
At MythMaking ETC, damn it. Mm-hmm. At Mike Myers Brunch or at Rob Krieger, like Seeger.
I feel like if I change it back, it'll just be even more confusing for you.
No, it won't, because I still type. There was like this small transition period where I could still type at MythMaking and your new monkey face robot head would come out. but it doesn't do it anymore. Mm. It forgot you. A matter of fact, I couldn't remember, and I was like, God, what does it have? Monkey, robot, dog, wolf. I like started typing a bunch of them until I got it.
Maybe I'll change it back for you.
I think robot was my like second choice. I did like monkey first.
Oh, boy.
And what else? Facebook is the same. Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, and I think that's about it.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, it's good to finally talk to you guys again.
Oh, yeah. Chris, it was nice having
you
back.
Had a good vacation. Sounds like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Good times.
I'm kind of jealous.
Wish I could go again.
I'm going on a vacation, but it's not really a vacation. It's kind of like the holiday thing.
Mm.
But I want to go on a trip like you did.
Yeah.
I just can't catch a break. Where I can take off.
It is tough to take a long period of time without then coming back and having more work for yourself.
Yeah, I should just do it like I did for Thanksgiving coming up. I just said, fuck it. Like, there was even an earlier time where Barb went without me because I couldn't go because of work. It sucked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, screw this. I'm not going to do it again for Thanksgiving. Yeah. I'm tired of being sticking behind and everybody else doing it. So I'm just saying, fuck it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have, I mean, you got to take a break or the work that you do isn't going to be up to your normal standards, you know, if you don't get a break once in a while.
So, all right, well,
all right, guys.
We can drop off, and we'll finish discussing Batman 57.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Yep. Yeah, bye, thanks. Guys.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.